The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
I'm about to place a call to Dara Albright of Dara Albright Media, and she's also the founder of FinTech Revolution TV. She's going to be our guest, and she is really one of the early proponents of the crowd finance movement. She writes articles and white papers about it and produces webinars and industry conferences for the crowd finance industry. And she's been on the program before discussing fintech or financial technology, the whole fintech movement. Most recently, though, Dara was one of the speakers at the Crypto Invest Summit in Los Angeles. That was on May 1 and 2. And the conference was subtitled Cryptocurrencies, a Passing Fad or a Trillion-Dollar Asset Class. And I asked her to join us by phone to give us some insights as to really what took place at the conference. She has written that cryptocurrencies have been described as the latest innovation to disrupt the financial markets. She went on to say that the growing mainstream enthusiasm for Bitcoin has everyone from Warren Buffett to the SEC to venture capitalists weighing in. Warren Buffett has been skeptical of crypto as an emerging asset class, referring to it as pure speculation rather than investing. Then on the other hand, there's bulls such as prominent venture capitalist Tim Draper, who believes that Bitcoin will reach $250,000 by the year 2022. So the question still hangs in the air as to whether cryptocurrency is a passing fad or an emerging trillion-dollar asset class. We're going to ask Dara to fill us in on some of this. She is in her home base of Atlanta, and we'll just call her up right now and get a take on the conference. Should be expecting
Hello?
A call. Hey, Dara, it's Mike Consul at Real Assets
Hey,
Advisor.
How are you?
Good,
good. How are you doing?
Doing well. So how was the conference?
Was great. I mean, honestly, my head has been spinning since the day I got back. I mean, it was inspirational just as far as ideas, and it was pretty incredible. I mean, I felt the sessions were great. It was really crowded, but it was just the amount of innovation that's happening in the space. I mean, it really is incredible. It makes everything that you know, in the P2P and crowd finance space, it makes that look like child's play.
How many people were there?
I don't know the exact number. There were a couple thousand people there. It was at the LA Convention Center.
Wow. So that's a big time.
Yeah. Okay. It was big. I mean, there was a couple thousand. I mean, I'll put it to you this way. When you got there the first day of sessions, they actually had a bouncer at the door in the main session room because they ran out of seats. So it was kind of, people had to wait online to even get in to see some of the sessions. And then, the rest was okay. But I don't think they expected that many people.
Nobody had to get bounced?
No, people did. There was a line of people waiting outside the door.
Oh, well,
not to get into the event, just to get into the session.
Okay, but hopefully they didn't have to be strong-armed by the bouncers.
I don't think that the bouncers kicked anyone out, but it sort of felt like I was, back at New York City Club and I was 25 years old again.
Back to the mosh pit.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you said that there was a couple thousand people there, lines of people trying to get into certain sessions. Tell us about the overall energy of the conference. What was it like?
It was really high energy. There was so much enthusiasm. And I would say that, not only there are a couple thousand just on the attendees, there were about 80 exhibitors, 45 presenting companies alone. They did sort of like a sidetrack of company pitches in the crypto space. And there were really just two solid days of of you know, informational sessions that were really, really enlightening. And I would say that the audience ranged everyone from experts in the crypto and the ICO field to just regular individuals, you know, people who just trade crypto for their own accounts. So it was really, really diverse crowd. And, you know, my initial thought when I was there was, wow, it is incredible to see just how quickly this asset class is reaching the mainstream. And I, you know, just in my experience, and I've been on Wall Street, you know, 26 years now, I mean, I've never seen any kind of enthusiasm for any asset class spread this rapidly. Even, you know, the enthusiasm for the dot-com bubble in the 90s, I mean, this even dwarfed that. It was pretty incredible.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that exuberance. What comes to mind is our former Treasury Secretary, Mr. Who am I thinking of? Alan Greenspan. With his reference to irrational exuberance. And some people have even said that cryptocurrency is kind of like the tulip sensation many, many years ago when everybody just thought, hey, look, if tulips are hot, then I want in, and irrationally drove the price way beyond what it the market could really justify. Did the magnitude of the crowd make it seem as though that we might be witnessing something that's a little over-enthusiastic, maybe even irrational? I mean, you said yourself that the sensation here is bigger than what you saw during the dot-com bubble. What do you think?
You know what? It was amazing. And if you would have asked me before the event, is this, you know, what is this mania? I would have probably said, yeah, more, you know, just irrational exuberance. But, you know, after really spending time and really learning a lot from the sessions and really understanding, getting a much better grasp of what's going on, I have to say, no, this doesn't feel like, you know, the irrational exuberance of the past. This is something that feels very, very different. It feels like almost like we're experiencing an asset mania unlike anything that we've ever witnessed before. I mean, yes, there's exuberance, there's enthusiasm, high energy, a lot of excitement, but I wouldn't call it irrational. You know, based on everything that I observed at the event, it doesn't look like this is a bubble. It really feels like it's more of the beginning of the digital finance era. And, you know, it was pretty incredible. I was trying to think about actually talking about the dot-com bubble, and I was thinking about, you know, I was just really trying to understand how this works and why is everyone really just so excited about crypto. And the only way I was able to kind of process it in my head and make the comparison between what's happening now in crypto to what was happening, you know, during the dot-com era, it is like this. If someone came up to you in, let's say, you know, 1991, 1992, and said to you, you know, there's just going to be this thing called the Internet, and we're going to give you an opportunity. You can't own equity in the Internet, but it's going to change everything, and it's going to change the way, you know, we share information, and it's going to just completely transform the way people consume products, you know, goods and services, and it's going to change everything. And while you can't own equity in the Internet, I'm going to give you an opportunity, if you want, to basically invest in this Internet coin that I'm creating. And it'll give you an opportunity to, at some point, you know, once this in, this thing is going to get big. There's going to be billions of people around the planet that is going to be, you know, exchanging goods and services, a lot of commerce happening on this thing called the Internet. I'm going to give you this Internet coin that's going to enable you to basically, you know, buy and sell all of these you know, goods and you know, these products globally on the Internet.
But we can do that now. We can do
right,
that
right.
Now.
Of course. But I'm saying, if someone said that to you in 1991 and they said they wanted you to invest in this coin for this thing called the Internet that no one's ever heard of, you know, you would kind of look at them like that's a little crazy. And that's exactly, that's exactly the whole point. That's exactly what's happening now. And so when you talk about the enthusiasm for crypto, basically they believe that what's going to be happening, if you're not so much investing in these different currencies as you are investing in these protocols. So you're basically buying into the belief that at some point, you know, in the future, there you're going to be able to, whatever it is, you know, you'll be able to have like this thing called the internet, or, you know, where you'll be able to, buy and sell goods and services, or use that coin that you're obtaining, will have tremendous value in the ability and purchasing power.
But why do we need other currencies? Here's the thing: we've got currencies all over the world now. We have the dollar as the global currency, and now we have even Vladimir Putin talking about creating a currency, a cryptocurrency, so that he can circumvent sanctions against his country. Why do we need a plethora of internet-based currencies? It's a two-part question, because here's the other thing that would concern me as an investor. The barriers to entry are very low. If you have the technical expertise, you can create a cryptocurrency. So now the market gets flooded with hundreds, perhaps thousands of cryptocurrencies. And what is the real value of a currency if they proliferate to the degree that there's just nothing really all that unique or precious about it? Let's start with just, why do we even need currency, these cryptocurrencies, when we have so many other currencies that are already exchanged electronically?
Right. So I would say, first of all, I think, you know, I think a lot of these current, and there are now, you know, hundreds, if not, there's probably even a couple thousand coins out there now. I think the bulk of them are pretty much worthless. Do we need all these currencies? Most of them really aren't going to amount to anything. But I think what really currency is only as good as its purchasing power, is the ability to spend it. So, you're right now buying into the fact that that at some point in the future, like let's say Bitcoin as a perfect example, when Bitcoin first surfaced on the scene, people were buying into the fact that, okay, at some point people will be able to buy and sell goods and services using their Bitcoin. You know, that would have seemed even crazy even a couple of years ago if you think about it, but look how mainstream that even Bitcoin has gotten, that now, I just read an article the other day that the state of Florida is now even accepting Bitcoin for people to pay their taxes. So it's really interesting when you see that it's really a matter of all of these other producers coming out there and accepting Bitcoin or accepting these coins in a transaction. And I guess it remains to be seen, why do we need all of these coins? First of all, you don't need all of these coins, but I think it's going to be each one is very, very different, and each one represents, people are buying into it not to have like one kind of global currency. Well, maybe even some do believe that it's going that way. But I think it's really more about, it was very interesting. I think that there are a lot of people in the space that don't want to see, they're really looking for the true democratization of finance. And I think that there are people that even want to see this, that are looking at this as, more from an anarchist perspective. Like, this is, it's amazing.
It sure seems like we already have anarchy right now. Right now, but maybe a little bit more would be the formula. Is Bitcoin going to be the big dog here, or do you think that Bitcoin doesn't have any particular advantage? I suppose you could say first mover advantage, although there are people who say the second mover is usually the one that learns from the mistakes of the first mover. Is Bitcoin looking to be the dominant cryptocurrency in over the longer term. Was there any sense from the folks at the conference as to whether they thought there was going to be a few dominant players and there were going to be hundreds or thousands of little niche players?
Well, let me just start by saying that, you know, I really don't subscribe to, as you said, too, that the first mover is not always the one that becomes the big leader or the big 800-pound gorilla in the space. I mean, you know, I didn't arrive at the conference thinking that, you know, Bitcoin was going to, you know, trillions and trillions of dollars. You know, my feeling has always been crypto is compelling and it's disruptive technology. And you know, I really believe that digital currencies itself are the future. However, you know, if I had to say and choose whether Bitcoin was going to the moon like that, my gut tells me that the future won't be Bitcoin, but some other digital coin. You know, one reason only, is that, you know, if you look back on history, you know, the pioneers don't always become the market leaders. I mean, look at MySpace. It didn't end up being Facebook. You know, it didn't end up being the global social network that everyone thought it would be. Or Alta Vista didn't become Google. You know, Google became Google. So, you know, I mean, just from experience, I agree. I don't, so for that, it always makes me think, I don't know if it's going to be Bitcoin. And I think 250,000 sounds incredibly high. That said, interestingly, you know, there are a lot of more and more businesses starting to accept Bitcoin. That makes a very big difference. So, you know, while I don't really know, I think the consensus really was at the event that everyone believes that, and this is where the mindset of the crypto trader. I mean, the belief is, or the mindset is, we believe that there is going to be a coin that is going to be a $1 trillion market, $1 trillion opportunity. They don't know which coin that is going to be. So the best way to play the space is just to really diversify and spread capital around a lot of little, you know, a lot of different coins. So that's kind of how I see it. I don't know. I wish I had a crystal ball, but if I had to say, is Bitcoin going to the moon? And just based on, you know, history, I would have to say it's going to be something else.
Well, what is the market size for cryptocurrencies? Do we even have a grasp on how large that is? And obviously the conference was toying with the idea of it becoming a $1 trillion market. But currently, is there a market size?
Yeah, it's about a $400 billion market. And obviously that changes, you know, every day. But it's about a $400 billion market. And, you know, in the first few months of 2018, $6 billion was already raised through ICOs, and that's initial coin offerings. There was talk at the conference that by the end of 2018, they predict that hundreds of what's called security token offerings, or STOs, will be coming to the market.
Security token offerings. So tell us about those. What are they, and why are they catching fire?
Sure. So when, you know, ICOs first came on the scene, essentially people were going out and, you know, raising capital using these ICOs, and they were not registering these or deeming these as securities. They were digital tokens. So the SEC came out a couple of months ago and said, you know, there's a big debate going on, which is really what's happening now, is that how is the SEC going to review an ICO? Is it a security or is it not a security? And that is really the big question right now that everyone is asking and nobody has an answer for. We're even hearing conflicting reports from the SEC itself. You know, there are some that come out and say some commissioners believe that it should be a security. You know, then there are others. Recently, Commissioner Hester Pierce came out and said, that she's wary of just going out there and labeling all ICOs as a security, you know, that you know, just doing a blanket designation like that. So that's the big question that everyone is really looking at right now, is it a security or is it not? And why is that so important is because this is really where, it becomes, how is this industry going to be regulated and what does it all mean? So if these things right now, if it becomes that these are deemed a security, then all of these ICOs, basically what will happen is the STOs will replace ICOs. So STOs is really just a different name. It's actually designating ICOs as a security, essentially, and then saying that because they are a security, they have to be in some way, registered with the SEC. File the traditional, filing a traditional S-1 or a Reg A plus, or, going through, another exemption like a 506C or a Reg CF. So that's the difference. So it's basically an STO is an ICO that has been in some way, there's been some sort of filing with the SEC.
So the security token offering, or STO, as the acronym goes. So an STO, the regulatory, or let's just talk about the hoops you need to jump through to get that enacted. I know IPOs have fallen off the cliff because of the expense now for and the complexity of an IPO. So an STO, by comparison, is much simpler, I would imagine. Is that the case?
It is, because basically what you would be doing is using one of the Jobs Act exemptions to file them, and that's sort of what the consensus is now. Who knows if that will be what it will end up being. And we don't really have any guidance, because the SEC hasn't given any guidance, nor have they even really come out and said that it is a security. So we're still waiting. But let's say they do say that this is a security, where lawyers seem to stand now, or what a lot of lawyers are actually recommending that any clients who are looking to launch an ICO do is go out there and preemptively, do really an STO, or, file it under some exemption. Most are actually advising clients to do a 506C, which is, Title II of the Jobs Act. Gives an issuer to raise unlimited, amount of capital through their ICO/STO. They are able to, file a very short, Form D. It's, simple two-page form, very inexpensive. It won't really cost the issuer a lot of money to do that. The only caveat with that is that, for an issuer, is that if you go in that direction, you have to ask yourself, one, am I shooting myself in the foot by going out there and admitting that, I am a security, when, you're having a lot of the ICOs go out and saying, look, we're not a security, and here's why we're not a security. So that's one thing. The second thing is, of course, with a 506C is that, it's only for accredited investors. So that's a problem, too. You can't sell it to the masses. So that creates some challenges. And then I think the last thing that really creates a challenge, especially with a 506C, is that, when you do a traditional 506C raise, and you're doing the offering, those shares are restricted for a year. So if there's an issuer that wants to go out and do an STO and raise under a 506C, they also can't really create a market for those tokens for at least a year until the restriction is up. So those are the things that issuers really need to consider. And, you know, and especially right now when we're really in kind of this place where nobody knows. Nobody knows, you know, what the SEC is going to do. And, you know, it's not even just here in the U.S. It's amazing. You know, even other countries around the world are kind of waiting to see what the U.S. does, what the SEC does. So it's really going to be something very interesting to watch.
Well, my understanding is China has already basically banished the country of cryptocurrencies, at least temporarily. They put it on hold. Is that correct, that China's just basically said cryptocurrencies are null and void within our borders?
Yeah, it's very, very difficult to do these in China. China came out really, really against the crypto space. You know, other countries obviously are a lot more, you know, embracing. But I think a lot of countries are also, like I said, looking to the U.S. And, you know, it seemed at the event that a lot of the experts were saying that the STO or the security tokens are really going to be the most important trend in the industry. They had one of the greatest sessions that I had the opportunity to see. They actually filmed a live version of the crypto trader, a segment of the show directly at the event. And it was really, really interesting. And they had Jeremy Gardner of Awesome Ventures, which is a venture fund that invests in blockchain and crypto and ICOs. And he was quoted as saying, security tokens are hands down the most important trend in the industry. The ability to tokenize, and I wrote this down, a real-world asset and put it on the blockchain will be the most important trend moving forward. And he also predicts that within 2 years, security tokens will be the largest crypto asset class, perhaps even the largest asset class within a decade. So not only within the crypto world, we're talking, you know, even surpassing equities, you know, bonds. I mean, just essentially the largest asset class in a decade. That's his prediction. So it's going to be really interesting to see. I mean, I think there were a lot of people that at the event that seemed to really feel that STOs will replace ICOs ultimately. You know, some even thinking that maybe even replace IPOs altogether. So it's going to be really interesting to see how it all plays out. We are witnessing just such an incredible moment in history, and seeing this whole thing unfold and watching it from the beginning, I just find it fascinating.
Well, how are cryptocurrencies going to grow? Because you have people like Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan calling it basically a fraud. Warren Buffett's not on board with it. It seems like it's this enthusiastic group of people. I know a guy who's a son of some friends of mine, and he's a heavy metal musician. He's in his 20s, and he's buying Ethereum and other Bitcoins. I mean, because he thinks it's a sensation. Is it going to be the individual enthusiast that's going to drive this at this point, or what needs to be kind of the tipping point from an institutional standpoint? How are institutions going to end up driving the growth of cryptocurrencies, if at all?
So, you know, there's a lot of talk about that, too. You know, the growth of the industry is really going to happen once the institutions, you know, get involved. And we're starting to see that. I mean, we're starting to see big financial players getting involved. I mean, you know, Goldman Sachs. I mean, there are some big major players that are, and everybody, you know, almost there's like every company now is just trying to figure out a way, you know, to understand blockchain and incorporate blockchain into their business. I think people understand that this is the future. I think that even with a lot of the big banks, they're skeptical, but at the same time, you know, they're scared of not doing it. You know, so I think that that's really interesting. But, you know, we'll, you know, and I think it's clear that institutions will definitely, you know, drive the growth of the market. But, you know, some believe, like there was talk at the institution, at the conference, for example, that, you know, once the SEC actually comes in and implements, you know, the, you know, puts the rules in place for crypto, that will bring institutions in. You know, there are others believe that really what's stopping the institutions right now is a licensed custodian from entering the space. You know, that's another obstacle that's in the way. I recently read an article that stated that there's a significant amount of additional institutional capital that's being raised right now and being amassed right now that's just sitting on the sidelines, you know, and they're basically waiting, quote, for these right conditions. And for them, the right conditions are, you know, regulatory clarity, institutional-grade data, and enterprise-ready infrastructure. So that's what people are saying. My sense is that institutional demand is going to be driven by the ability for institutions to really feel comfortable in their ability to hedge. And I think that one day they, you know, the day that they are able to, you know, really be able to properly hedge. And I'm not talking just, I know, you know, now you could, you know, there's ways of shorting Bitcoin. But I mean, I'm talking about really the whole crypto space in general. I'm talking even of these little smaller coins. I'm talking about it is a real market. I think that once they kind of figure out a way that enables them to really properly hedge, lock in crypto returns, I think they're just going to flood the market with capital. I see it going in that direction. And I mean, it's interesting, you know, look at institutional dollars. They seem to, in recent years, be following retail in other alternative asset classes too. I mean, they, you know, it was the institutions that drove the growth of the P2P lending market, marketplace lending, but it was retail investors that really started it. So it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out, but I think retail investors are actually leading the way when it comes to the first adopters of financial innovation.
So I was talking to a fellow at a recent conference I was at, and he mentioned Goldman Sachs and that they have gotten involved with cryptocurrencies, mainly because their clients are starting to become possessors of cryptocurrency, and they obviously want to provide the services that their clients need. And they didn't want to, of course, send them away to somebody else to say, we have no solution for you. So they've gotten involved just because the clients have gotten involved with cryptocurrency. And I would imagine other financial institutions are facing the same thing. So there you go, where all of a sudden it's infusing institutions and so on. So what is the answer to the question of the conference? Is it going to be, it sounds, based on your enthusiasm, Dara, that you feel like we are looking at $1 trillion asset class, $1 trillion plus over time. Is that the way you feel about it, that it's actually going to hit?
I do. Yeah, I do. It's not a passing fad. It is, I mean, whether it's Bitcoin, whether it's some other coin, whether it's something that we haven't even seen yet, who knows, but this is, the future of finance is digital, and that truly this is not a passing fad. I mean, this is, we're in for some really interesting times. And with that said, I mean, it probably is the most, you know, the most exciting time to just even create wealth in probably the history of finance itself. I mean, you know, just when we're at, you know, that forefront of all of this innovation, and it's really taking it to a new level. It's a truly remarkable time.
What does it mean for other traditional currencies, say the dollar, the euro, the yuan, the yen, and so on? Does it affect those other currencies at all? Or what do you think the interplay is going to be between traditional and cryptocurrencies?
I mean, I think it's a great question. I think if you look really, really long term, I think it's interesting. I mean, I think that what will probably end up happening is that even governments will start adapting crypto and in some way, and start having to, they're going to have to adapt in some way. I mean, look, if you look back even in the history of the dollar, you know, the dollar used to be backed by gold. You know, the dollar's not backed by gold anymore. It's backed by policy. I mean, you know, it's what's going to happen to all these other currencies. I mean, sometimes it's a little even scary to think about. I don't know. I mean, because what we're talking about is so disruptive that it could potentially even disrupt governments. And that's kind of, I mean, that's sort of thinking like way out there, but it is a scary thought.